Good morning and welcome to your Monday edition of Southeast Radio's Morning Mix. Coming up in the programme today, the call goes out for an update on the third Labour University facility here in Wexford. Amongst many items are discussed with Labour Party Deputy George Lawler, who I met over the weekend. We have a detailed interview with the Deputy coming up in just a few moments' time. Meanwhile, a new €1 million centre in the Rosslare area got the go-ahead. I'll be joined live in the studio by the Chair of the Rosslare District, Ger Carty. The Minister for Housing, James Brown, had something to say on this over the weekend too.
I'm delighted to announce, along with Councillor Lisa MacDonald, a successful project for Rosslare. This is a new civic and recreation plaza which will form a focal point for sustainable tourism experience for Rosslare. And it is €1 million project, and I want to thank my colleague, Minister Dara Cleary, for working with myself and Councillor Lisa MacDonald to deliver this funding.
Ger Carty will be joining me live in studio in a few moments' time. But before that, let's look at what else is happening in the world of the news. Let's look at the headlines from the main national papers today. In the Irish Daily Mail, Connolly scramble over views on Europe. Oras candidate would damage diplomatic efforts by insulting allies, says Humphreys. The Irish Independent leads with 1,600 properties identified in probe into illegal holiday lets. Meanwhile, on the front page of the Irish Times, drone defence is to be acquired before EU meetings. The state wants technology in advance of a visit of EU leaders to Dublin next autumn. The move comes following recent Russian drone incursions into EU member states. Front page of the Irish Daily Star, data for a gentleman brutally killed after a night out. Victim beaten to death with blunt weapon outside of home. In the Irish Daily Mirror, moment of truth in Gaza, hope amid the chaos. And online in the Journal, Israel receives 7 hostages released by Hamas as part of a ceasefire agreement. The Israeli military said the Red Cross was on its way to collect more hostages. If you'd like to contact the programme, give us a shout on 053 914 5222, with Catherine taking the calls. Or if you text or WhatsApp us on 087 373 7956. That's in association with Doyle's Garage, Courtown and Enniscorthy, your main MG dealer for County Wexford. And Lucinda's keeping an eye on the texts and WhatsApps as they come in. And we have a competition for Halloween that I'll bring to your attention in a few moments' time. But recently he was in Japan, the Labour Party spokesperson, Enterprise Wexford Deputy George Lawler. But I got a chance to speak to him over the weekend before he headed to Dáil Éireann this morning. And first of all, I asked him for his view on the budget.
I thought it was very, very disappointing for workers in particular. In fact, it has been stated categorically and across the board that workers will be less well off as a result of this budget. You know, they literally got nothing. Mm. And that to me is worrying, that the people who drive the economy, the people who go out day in, day out to work, pay their taxes and essentially keep the economy ticking over, were abandoned in this budget. We've discussed it up and down about the hospitality decrease. Of course, there are some of the smaller hospitality units that will welcome it and hopefully will benefit from it. But certainly the notion that the likes of McDonald's, who are one of the most profitable hospitality units in the country, will get hundreds of millions from this. Yeah. To me, it's not a good day's work.
Before I move on to other issues, you've just come back from Japan. That in itself seems very, very interesting as to why you were there.
Yeah.
But you can't help but have noticed in this studio, one of the presidential candidates, Heather Humphreys, was with me last Friday, mm-hmm. and she got very upset over this video, which seemed to indicate that she was been poked fun at by Joe Brawley. He's since gone online and denied that be the case. But I let the listeners themselves, if they've seen the video, judge for themselves.
Yeah, I think it was more than poking fun. I think it was misogynistic. I think it was anti-women. I think it was crass and coarse and horrific that a woman would be spoken about, or anybody indeed, but particularly a woman running for the highest office in the land, would be spoken about in such a crass, lowly manner. I wouldn't expect any more from Joe Brawley. I mean, he fancies himself as some sort of a contributor to the daily lives of Ireland. And in the context of what he endeavours with regard to United Ireland, I think the notion that he would be attacking a woman who has, I suppose, a family history on the other side of Joe Brawley's discussions and arguments makes it even more a grievous comment, I suppose, or commentary that he made. I do note that the person opposite him seemed quite embarrassed by his actions. It was crass, it was low, it was misogynistic. But I wouldn't expect anything less from Joe Brawley. It's what I would describe as a forensic election. Everything is gone through. The Jim Gavin issue, I was actually told about in August, believe it or not. And in the podcast, Niall Donald, who I know a close personal friend of Niall Donald's, who had informed me of this last August. And Niall Donald actually mentioned in the podcast that it was discussed at the Labour Party thinking. Mm. I knew that that was an issue for Niall Donald for a number of years. I think it was handled very, very badly. I think the whole selection process for Fianna Fáil was handled very, very badly. I mean, I spoke to Jim Callaghan during the week, and you know, the manner in which politicians handle situations is sometimes overlooked. You know, it's a skill to be able to stand before an interviewer like yourself and have questions thrown at you and answer them in a way and a manner that is well thought out and well structured and understandable. But Jim, apart from the rent issue at all, didn't appear to have the skills that were required to be in the political sphere. Yeah. Someone described to me he's somewhat robotic, and that's the reason he was such a successful All-Ireland winning manager, because he was robotic and forensic in the manner in which he went about his business as a football manager. But when it comes to being a politician, that level of interaction and warmth that you require just wasn't there. So, you know,
I know you're a member of the Labour Party, but on the outside looking in, do you think that Micheál Martin has come through this now? And indeed, Jack Chambers.
Yeah, I think he has. You mentioned I was in Japan. I was in Japan with one of his younger lieutenants, James O'Connor, who issued a rather strong statement against Micheál Martin after the Jim Gavin withdrawal. You know, there was quite a degree of anger within Fianna Fáil, quite a degree of anger. However, I think any move against Micheál Martin was always going to be dependent on how Jim O'Callaghan was positioned, and Jim indicated that the time wasn't right for him. And I think that was crucial to Micheál Martin's survival.
While we are on the subject of Japan, talk to me as to why you were there. Why were you in Japan?
Yeah, because of all the various geopolitical tariffs and things that and instability, the Irish government were determined that with the World Expo happening in Osaka, that that Ireland would have a strong presence there. So I'm a member of the Enterprise Committee. And three of us from the Enterprise Committee and three from the Trade and Foreign Affairs Committee travelled to Osaka to be part of the pavilion, the Irish pavilion at the World Expo, which is one of the biggest, I suppose, demonstrations of the Irish, the island of Ireland that you can get. And there's every country in the world is represented. We were there. We were also there meeting various different individuals. We went to Ireland House in Tokyo, which is a wonderful new all-in-one, if you like, all under one roof Irish presence, where you have Bord Fáilte, Bord Bia, the Irish Embassy, all under one roof, newly built. In fact, I met a girl from Wexford who's working in Ireland House, Emily Mahan, I think from Hill Street originally. And a niece of the late great Fonzo Mann, who was a Labour stalwart, so it was great, great to meet her. But
do you think we'll get something from this?
Yes, I mean we have to be looking at new markets, and that's what the and diversifying, and that's what the embassy were key to have people out there doing, meeting Japanese business people, meeting Irish people who have really done well in the Japanese market. I mean, Japan is we were in four cities, we went to Kyoto, we went to Osaka, we went to Tokyo. And we went to Hiroshima. We met the mayor of Hiroshima. As people know, 70,000 people killed in seconds in Hiroshima with the dropping of the atomic bomb. But all in all, all told, 67 cities in Japan were destroyed during the Second World War. And that country has built itself up from its bootstraps to be one of the major powers in the world. We can learn a lot from that. But we can also do a lot of trading with Japan and have a lot of interaction with a country that really knows how to do business.
While you were away, you missed out on something I know you would love to have been at, and that was, of course, the development with Georgia Southern University, you've been across. Yeah. This seems to be gathering momentum, so I'll give you an opportunity, because I know you would like to have made a comment at that particular point.
Yeah, this was something that we, when I was a councillor, when I was Cathaoirleach of the council, and when I was a councillor, we worked very closely with Georgia Southern University. They have a buildings section within Georgia Southern, just outside just outside Savannah. And so this whole Irish project was something that we had to massage over the line. And I know that the president, both the president and the of Georgia Southern University, Kyle Marrero, and Professor Howard Keeley, who's no stranger to this studio, were keen that the Wexford element would be part of it. So we discussed and negotiated and moved on the Adoration Convent over a number of years.
And it leads on to what people are waiting with bated breath for, any update on the third level facility in Wexford.
It's something that I will be raising on this week in Leinster House in questions to the Minister for Higher Education. I look forward to talking to James Lawless, who is a Gorey man, who has a keen interest in Southeast Technological University. It's travelling way too slow for my liking. Any hold up at all is seized upon as something to, you know, give a bit of relief, in my view, to SETU, to be perfectly honest. I think it's travelling way too slow. Yeah. And we have to keep serious pressure on, because we have two elements of SETU that are thriving in Waterford and Carlow, and always have been thriving, and millions have been invested there and continue to be invested. We are not going to be left out. I'm determined of that. This is something that money was made available for 10 years ago to purchase the land. We have to get it done, and get it done as a matter of urgency, because too many of our youngsters are being forced to leave County Wexford to partake in third level activity.
Today, this Monday, the council meeting takes place. I'll be there as usual. You were there on many, many occasions over many, many years. It's a golden opportunity for the media to hear all around County Wexford. As I said, I was blown away by what I came across within Buncloddy last Thursday, George, and particularly the young people. They have so much to offer. Mm-hmm. But you brought a very harrowing story to our attention, which, as I mentioned, Jack Sarones has complimented you on solving. What was the background to that story?
I was contacted a number of weeks ago by the Furlong family on behalf of their son Josh, a 23-year-old chap with non-verbal autism, doubly incontinent. The family were seeking a medical-grade mattress, and we made representations. They'd been seeking for a number of years, since January 2024, actually, when they start putting the pressure on. But we wrote to the HSE and got a letter back to saying it wasn't deemed to be a viable priority, which disgusted me, to be honest with you. I had the opportunity to raise it with the Taoiseach as the type of issue that people are dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, because this was more than just this one mattress.
This wasn't just about Josh and his family. This was indicative of the systematic way that people are put through the ringer by the HSE and other various agencies across the country for the simplest and smallest of things. You could tell if you saw on social media
the
response.
There were people who criticised it, sent messages to say, hang on a second, it's €150, go down and buy a mattress. Not everybody was sympathetic.
Yeah, I don't know what the cost of it is. I don't know
Did you get that as well from people who are saying?
No, I didn't, I have to say. But I will say that families are put to the pin of their collar, and when families are dealing with a child with special needs and have been doing so for 23 years, a simple request like a mattress is something that they should not be put through the ringer for, and too many people in this country are being put through the ringer on a day-to-day basis for the simplest of things. Right. I'm dealing with another 81-year-old, for instance, who needs pain management. She's been told it'll be another 18 months after waiting a number of years already before she is seen by a pain specialist. I mean, this is indicative. This mattress is indicative of everything.
More than just a mattress.
Yeah, more than just a mattress. We have a systematic problem in this country. You know, we have an awful lot of problem finders. We need more problem solvers.
Labour Party deputy and spokesperson on enterprise, George Lawler, who I got a chance to speak to over the weekend. He had just returned from Japan there from a very interesting journey, and shared some very interesting comments there on a wide range of topics. Amongst them very much was the third level facility, the slow pace, the slow delivery. I'm joined now in the studio by the Cathaoirleach of the Rosslare district, Ger Carty, to look at the really positive story about the €1 million funding. But a number of points raised there by Deputy Lawler, the delivery of the state-of-the-art campus. Is it something that will be raised, do you think, today? Because today is the main council meeting.
Yeah, the SETU campus is a cause for concern. It's certainly not a sprint, and it's definitely a marathon, and it's been going on way too long now. And it's time that the ministers and the TDs and the Oireachtas members got together and get the ball rolling in relation to that. We can have announcement after announcement. We have the Minister for Higher Education, Gorry Mann, at the tiller, at the cabinet table, and it's time for action now, and it's time to see the shovels in the ground. We've been talking about this now for long enough. I have.
And would you be in a position to ask for an update today?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll ask it under Chief Executive's report. But it is concerning that 1 year is rolling into the other, and there's not, like, we can talk about the acquisition of the land till the cows come home, but like, someone needs to catch this by the scruff of his neck, and get going with it, because this is a generational thing now, and we'll see generations pass by, and we won't have this SETU that we certainly deserve as a population. But also, we've had a very successful campus here in Wexford, and we need the next tier of that is the delivery of this state-of-the-art campus.
And that's very important that we do mention the existing campus that we do have here in Wexford, and that's why people are really looking forward to the new one with the acreage and the various courses that are being earmarked for it.
Yeah, and the appropriate facilities to be educated in. Under the SETU campus, which is certainly to be welcomed in Wexford, but we need to see this now. This has gone on long enough.
All right. The other aspect, just before I rounded off my conversation with Deputy Lawler, was about the case of that mattress. And it's far wider than just that one individual and that mattress. Like today, we're seeing there's a. I think I'm going to be discussing with Neil Hughes in a while, Chair. It's about the cost of living. And apparently, I think one supermarket, Lidl, has reduced their milk prices, which could lead to some sort of a supermarket war. But I think it's 2.75 is the national average for inflation. But when it comes to groceries and the cost of living, it's well over 4.75%. So anything to do with the cost of living and that particular incident, what are you hearing on the ground as a councillor? What are people concerned about?
People are so seriously concerned about the cost of living.
Yeah.
And you know, and I know, because Butter Wives will tell you that the price of shopping at the moment is astronomical, and it's rising.
I don't know about you, but I have to do the shopping myself for the boss on occasion, so I know full well things have gone up, haven't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, the budget wasn't, you know, it wasn't the most advantageous budget that we've ever seen, and something that didn't do a lot for the working class, and you know, It's difficult to see how that's going to improve in the coming.
I think Lidl has taken 10 cent off a litre of milk or something. I mean, even 10 cents.
Yeah, well, that's certainly to be welcomed. But I think hasn't chocolate gone up massively? Coffee, you name it. Like, and there are things that people are purchasing on a daily basis, and people are starting to struggle. And in relation to the mattress, a very disappointing situation that a family finds themselves in with a special needs child.
But it is down
to the fact that the HSE want to be in charge of everything, but they don't want to be responsible for anything. And that's the nub of this. There's too many
And you
managers,
say that, and you're working for
and
the
HSE. I work for the HSE, and I'm not afraid to say that. But there is too many tiers of management in who makes decisions in relation to the people that the services need to be provided to. And at the end of the day, those are the patient. The patient has to be front and centre in everything that we as the HSE do, and sometimes that isn't the case. And by the sounds of the reps that Deputy Lawler made, that certainly wasn't to the fore in relation to that case.
All right. And would you be getting, as a councillor, examples of that? I mean, independent councillor Jack Sarone, so I will speak today after the meeting, he was very complimentary in the way that the mattress situation was solved. But there were other people who weren't complimentary, who were saying, hang on a second, go buy the bloody mattress. I mean, that's the sort of environment we now live in.
That depends on your circumstances and your financial circumstances.
Do you think people are being hurtful by making those comments?
Well, maybe somewhat, but I don't know the personal circumstances of that family. But by the sounds of what I've been told, it's quite a difficult situation for that family with a child with medical difficulties.
Anyway, Ger, we will look forward to the meeting with interest this afternoon, and we'll bring back the summary of it tomorrow in the morning mix. But there was positive news for Rosslare on Friday. The area has been approved for an initial €1 million in funding under the Rural Regeneration Development Fund. This obviously is music to your ears. As chair of the district, what does it mean?
Well, Alan, this is something that I've worked on for a number of years under the previous chief executive. I had requested that the Rural Regeneration Fund and be channelled towards Rosslare Harbour and Rosslare Strand over a number of years. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. But this year, we've been successful in that. This is the first time that area of County Wexford has received the rural regeneration funding. And it will make a massive difference to the villages of Rosslare Harbour and indeed Rosslare Strand, who we are currently designing a greenway connection from Rosslare Harbour to the town of Wexford. which will stop in Rosslare Strand. Now, this wouldn't be possible without the dedication and the commitment of the director of the Rosslare Municipal District, Linda Lacey, who has been the driving force in relation to this application. And we put a very good application together, and there's big competition for the funding, and we were delighted to be successful with that. Yeah. This year is $1.4 million for the design stage of public railing works to Rosslare Strand, and indeed Rosslare Harbour and Aris Park, which is camper park, truck parking, to include new public railing works, to enhance a village centre, to demolish and renew the public toilets in Rosslare Strand, to provide extra car parking. And I can confirm today that we've signed the contracts on an acre of land within the curtilage of Rosslare Strand village for the purposes of public parking. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's excuse the pun, the rising tide lifts all boats. Yeah. But this is the beginning of the process of the design of both these projects. And what will happen then is the funding will come from central government, and to the tune of about 13.5 million.
There was reference there, Minister Brown's statement, to the work done by your fellow councillor Lisa MacDonald and her link in with Derek Killeary. Do you accept that she too played a huge role?
Oh, absolutely. And I want to take this opportunity to thank Lisa and indeed Minister Derek Killeary for securing the funding for Rosslare Strand and Rosslare Harbour. Myself and Councillor MacDonald work extremely well together in the delivery of projects across the Rosslare Municipal District for the people that elect us.
I'm looking at the article. Pádraig Byrne did a really good article on this as well in the People newspaper over the weekend. He said, over in the Strand, Category 1 plans include the construction of a tree-lined seaside boulevard with a one-way traffic system and shared cycling and walkways, construction of a village plaza, public realm works around the Greenway, construction of an amphitheatre along the coastal strip. I mean, this whole thing will... I love Rosslare as a place to visit anyway, but this is going to give it some boost, isn't it?
It's going to revitalise Rosslare Strand, and why would we not do it? Because that's the jewel in the crown of our tourism product for the Rosslare Municipal District, but for County Wexford, indeed the wider South East, Kelly Sawtell. Look at the beach, the facilities that we have there, and now we're also at an advanced stage with the flood and coastal protection scheme, which is north of 10 million. So there's massive money being spent in the heartland of my constituency, and I'm certainly delighted with that, and want to take this opportunity to thank the Government of Ireland, indeed Minister Boxer Moran, Minister Derek Cleary and Minister James Brown for the delivery of that funding. And Rosslare Harbour and Rosslare Strand will be linked now by the Greenway, and the county manager advises me on Friday that's at an advanced stage at the moment.
Yeah, Anne, who's a regular listener, by the way, has just texted in. Good morning, Tiana. I know you had difficulty getting through to us, but I have got your message this morning, and Lucinda's keeping a watchful eye on texts and WhatsApps as they come in. So if you have had a difficulty getting them through to us, bang them into us or keeping a watchful eye on them. We have to listen to what our listeners are looking for. And Anne has said, Lidl, Aldi, Tesco have all now decreased milk price, according to national news this morning. Thank you for that update, Anne. I mean, if price wars can help the hard-pressed consumer in Wexford and in Ireland, we'd welcome that, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Anything that reduces the outlay that you have to put every week is certainly to be welcomed. And I'd encourage more of the shopping businesses to do that.
All right, we're going to leave it there, Gerard. Are you anticipating an interesting council meeting today? What's on the agenda?
Yeah, well, I suppose we have. One of the key issues is that we've always had been given supplementary roads funding allocation to help and support us in our endeavours to deliver on road construction. And we normally got about $1 million at this time of the year every year, but unfortunately that didn't happen this year. And I'll be raising the question in the council chamber as to why it didn't.
My next guest is a rare visit to discuss the French situation. A lot happening in France at the moment, but I'm going to be talking to Chris Smith, who's involved with the Chamber and the involvement with France. And of course, Wexford as a county, and Rosslare in particular, has made huge links and developments with Normandy in particular, hasn't it? That connection with France, you're nicely placed, before I let you go, to talk about the improvement in links there.
Yeah, well, we have, a common goal that we're linked, as especially with the Rosslare Municipal District and Dunkirk. And, you know, we're now exiting into mainland Europe, opposed to going through a land bridge in England. So I suppose our connection with France has now become more apparent and more important But I think the local authority is certainly on the right side of the communications with France and how best we support our tourism product here in Wexford and indeed in France.
Anyway, we'll have a focus in on France and the link with Wexford and Ireland with Chris Smith in just a second.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix, brought to you with thanks to Choices Expert Wexford and Ninja at Choices. Discover innovative Ninja kitchen and outdoor cooking appliances in-store or online at choices.ie.
What is Vodafone SIM only? Well, it's the same great Vodafone reliability with unlimited calls, texts and data on the same great Vodafone network for just €25 a month. Perfect when you don't need us to do the phone part. Vodafone. Together we can.
New customers and those switching to our 24-month, €25 SIM-only plan. Each April, the price of your plan will increase by €2.50 per month. Full terms, see vodafone.ie/terms.
Addy, the home heating oil is gone again.
Ah, sake. Sure, I only got a delivery a few weeks ago. I'm sick of being ripped off.
Calm down. I'm going to order from Kenny Fuels. Kenny Fuels are Wexford's premier supplier of home heating oil and coal at great prices and deliver all over Wexford and beyond. Happy now?
Ah, that's better. I'm f***ing delighted.
Keep calm and order at kennyfuels.ie today.
At Grant's Pharmacy, we try to be more than just a pharmacy. We are a part of your community. I, Leonie Grant, own and run Grant's Pharmacy, and I grew up in Wexford, and I'm so proud to have the support of the local community in the southeast. We know our customers by name, and we know their families too, and it's our mission to be there when you need us. Our dedicated staff go the extra mile with explaining your prescription or simply taking the time to stop, chat and ask, how are you? That's the Grant's Pharmacy difference. It's not just about what we do, but how we do it, with care, kindness and that personal touch at Grant's Pharmacy.
Today, TVs are smart, doorbells are smart, and phones are genius. So, shouldn't selling property be smart too? It is with Sherry Fitzgerald. With over 100 offices nationwide, Sherry Fitzgerald sell an amazing 50% more properties than other agents, as well as providing full transparency via their online selling platform, mysherryfitz.ie. Choose an agent with access to thousands of potential buyers on file. Sherry Fitzgerald Radford in New Ross and Wexford, and Sherry Fitzgerald O'Leary Kinsella in Enniscorthy and Goree. Smarter selling starts here. Sherry Fitzgerald, the agent you'd recommend to a friend.
Residential property owners, time is running out. You need the valuation band of your property and to submit your local property tax return by the 7th of November. The easiest way to submit your return is online through My Account, Ross or the LPT portal. For more information, visit www.revenue.ie/LPT or call 01 738 3626 if you need assistance. Submit your local property tax return today to ensure you don't miss the deadline.
Southeast Radio's text and WhatsApp line 087-3737-956. Brought to you in association with Doyle's Garage, Cortown and Enniscorthy. Make sure your car is ready for those busy school runs. Call one of our service centres today at Doyle's Garage, Cortown or Enniscorthy.
Chat, news and your views. Southeast Radio's Morning Mix.
Well, I'll be heading to the council chambers a little bit earlier today because Nolene has been in touch from the Ballymanon area. The ongoing situation with the odour problems up there will lead to a further protest outside the chamber today, or outside the council chamber, I should today, or outside the council offices. So we'll bring you an update on that story in the programme tomorrow as well. But now I'm joined by Chris Smith, who's a newly appointed president of the France-Ireland Chamber of Commerce, a long-time transport and logistics executive. Good morning to you, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. Very good. Thanks very much.
Look, we watch with... there's a lot of instability here when it comes to concerns over the presidential election. For example, I've got a text just in. A caller is not happy with the two people going for the presidency here. This listener believes they are not fit to represent the country and they would like to cancel the election and start all over again. I'm not going to draw you into that one, but I will draw you into the instability in France, Chris. And what kind of ripple effect could it have on Irish businesses that trade with France? And first of all, talk to us about that instability.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, France, like, you know, is one of the oldest economies in the world, and, you know, Ireland has a huge amount of business with France, Alan. You know, we've been trading for a long, long time. It just, yeah, it does generate that instability and that uncertainty. This is the fifth prime minister, I think, in President Macron's second term, so that's not great having, you know, it's not a good look. But, you know, France has always been a very stable government. They've always had a stable government in Europe, always kind of European-friendly as well. They have a budget to pass, and this seems to be the struggle. And I think, you know, we had a budget here in Ireland last week, and, you know, it was, you wouldn't call it an austerity budget, but it wasn't a giveaway budget, where in France, you know, they have a huge imbalance in payments. They have to sort out their finances. They have to bring in a budget that's very, very unpalatable for a lot of people. So that's creating a problem within the French government and causing huge issues for them. So trying to get a prime minister in with a government that's going to get that through and try to agree that is difficult. And I suppose from an Irish perspective, when you look at it, you know, we have our own issues here in Ireland, you know, with governments, as you said, presidential elections. It's just part and parcel of governments, and, you know, most economies around the world have some issue going on. But it is, I suppose, a little bit surprising to see, you know, when you see five prime ministers, you know, in such a short space of time, it does definitely raise eyebrows. And I don't think it'll cause a huge amount of anxiety here in Ireland, but it certainly, I think, our antenna is up, and I think we are watching what's going on over there.
Yeah, I was watching it over the weekend, Chris, and I haven't got an update this morning. Have you? What is the latest, please?
Well, I think Le Cornu has gone back in again. You know, he's gone in for a second term, and now he's starting to appoint his government. You know, he's brought back in some people who are, you know, very strong supporters of Mr. Macron, and he's trying to build a government across kind of parties that, you know, that he needs support from other parties as well. And I think that's what he's trying to do, is get that consensus, you know, because obviously, you know, in France, you have the left and you have the hard right, and, you know, you have the centrists and so forth. And it is the government is a mix, you know, of different parties. So from what I can see this morning, reading the newspapers and so forth, I think he's trying to get, you know, a appeal to everybody, you know, while be they have to get a budget through. That's the biggest problem.
Let's Wexfordize it. You know, I've just spoken to the chair of Rosslare District, to Ger Carty, and I asked him about that link. And when I speak to Glenn Carr and the crew down there at Rosslare Harbour, the developments with Cherbourg and Normand in these places. I mean, our links with France as a county and County Wexford are huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I worked in Rosslare. You know, I'm in transport for over 35 years. I worked down in Rosslare. When I worked in P&O, we were one of the first companies to put a ship on that route from Rosslare to Cherbourg, going back 30 years ago. There's a huge connection between Ireland and France. I mean, that sea doesn't divide us. It connects us, really. There's an issue, obviously, now. Stenline Line have pulled off the route in the last couple of weeks, which was disappointing, but it was of their own making and their own decision as well. But thankfully, Brittany Ferries have popped in there now with, and they've gone 7 days a week from Rosslare to Cherbourg, which is great, support. And Brittany Ferries, as you know, is owned by the Breton Agricultural Cooperative. You know, it's owned by the farming organisations. They get support from the French government. There's been loans and so forth. So for me, I think that route's going to go from strength to strength. And the reason I say that is because there's a new freight train service going from Cherbourg down to Mouguer, down in the south of France, which is just on the Spanish border. Mm. And that's now, Alan, opened up huge opportunities for Irish companies in France and French companies in Ireland as well, which means that if the weather is bad, you know, from Rosslare to Cherbourg, or if the weather is bad from Rosslare to Bilbao, you can train the goods up into northern France. And I think it's going to open up a lot more, you know, from a freight point of view and a goods point of view. I think we're going to see that route definitely drive on. The fact that Brittany Ferries control the train as well, so we can put here in perennial freight today with our trailer, put onto a ship tonight and get it on a train tomorrow evening. It's fantastic. I would be positive about it. I don't think there's going to be any issues from a French point of view, what's going on with the government. I don't think that's going to affect, you know, what's going on, hopefully, on there. But it does create instability, absolutely.
Yeah, because there is a worry out there about short-term disruption. Or is it likely to be more of a longer-term policy concern? What do you think, Chris?
I think if you look at the instability and what's going on there, the biggest problem for everybody is when you get a government going in like that, that's kind of a mishmash of different parties. You know, it's a strike. I mean, France, they're very, very strong on strikes, and that's a big issue for Irish businesses. You know, when strikes happen, you know, they blockade ports, blockade roads, that's a difficult part. I mean, you know, it happens. There's not an awful lot we can do about that. But if they can get this government to settle down and if they can get the budget through, I think it'll be okay. But there, I mean, yeah, if you look at strikes in France, the one aspect I take from it is strikes. And I was at an event in Dublin last week with the Port of Normandy, and we were talking about this. And there's been 7 strikes this year in Cherbourg, all to do with, you know, people on, you know, not being happy with the new changes in the pension age and so forth, and the austerity in France. That's probably the biggest issue for most of us. You know, we can't dictate what's going to happen at government level. You know, it's, you know, but what we can try to do is keep trading with France. And France is our nearest European neighbour. And it is the biggest support, it's a big supplier of goods and services to Ireland. You know, the biggest European supplier of goods.
So there's a lot of confidence in at the moment, Chris, is there? Despite all of this.
Yeah, look, Alan, you'd have to stay. I think in any business, you have to have a positive outlook. You can't go around your heads on the ground. There could be problems. Who knows? You know, we don't know what's going to happen. But if you look at France and what's going on in between Ireland and France, yeah, the interconnector, the Metro North is coming soon. We're going to have offshore wind. That's going to be a lot. That's going to come from French companies helping, supporting Irish companies as well, and collaborating with them. A lot of people I know are trading more France now after Brexit. I think that mystique has gone out dealing with Europe now. You know, the language barrier is not as bad in France. So I would be positive about about the links between Ireland and France.
All right, looking ahead then, and as you know, recently all the chambers came together in Wexford. We have a very strong chamber now here with the 4 main towns all linked. Do you, as chair of the president or chair of the France-Ireland Chamber of Commerce, do you have links in with, here with Wexford? And looking ahead, what opportunities do you see for a county like Wexford?
Absolutely. I was actually at the recent event there, the Alliance Francaise, he opened up again in the last couple of weeks, and the ambassador was down from Dublin, so I was in there with the chamber. Very strong chamber, as you said. I'm praying for it. We're members of the chamber. So I think, you know, you're seeing more of the chambers linking together, and I know we will always try to support, you know, the France-Ireland Chamber of Commerce and the companies we represent. I mean, we represent people in the pharma and the tech group, you know, in manufacturing and in the financial. Danone and Wexford are members of the France-Ireland Chamber of Commerce. They're members of the Wexford Chamber of Commerce. So there's a huge cross-connection there between all the companies, you know, who are members of different chambers. I mean, we're all trying to do the same thing, Alan, in any chamber. What you do in a chamber, it's not about numbers. It's about really creating that space and that kind of silo where we can all get in and talk about our businesses. And some businesses join chambers, you know, to grow their business. But a lot of people join chambers, like the Wexford Chamber, just to find out what's going on locally, what's happening. And then, you know, the bigger chambers, like the France-Ireland Chamber, you know, at a higher level, what's coming on the tracks, what's going on at political. So I think the chambers working together, you know, the Wexford, the France-Ireland Chamber of Commerce, the Waterford Chamber of Commerce, the South East, if we can all kind of keep talking together and, you know, support each other, particularly, you know, on the connections between Ireland and Normandy, as you said, you know, support the companies in the region as well. And the startups, it's important, Alan, that the startups, small companies starting off, when they get into a chamber, that's where they, you know, they see the benefits of it, listening to some of the bigger companies and finding out and experiencing what happens at that level.
Thank you, Chris. Enjoy the conversation with you this morning. Looking forward to talking to you again at a later date, but very interesting about the links with France. To round off part one of your morning mix, we link in with Neil Hughes, and I've asked him specifically to look at the cost of living and where do you think it's heading in just a second.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix, brought to you with thanks to Joyce's Expert Wexford. Discover the latest Dyson products at Joyce's. Shop for Dyson vacuums, fans, purifiers, as well as Dyson hair bestsellers.
Looking for a Nugent trailer? Call Byrne Trailers Bunclody, your one-stop shop for sales, service and parts. We guarantee 12-month warranty on all new trailers sold. Phone 053 937 5580 or log on to burntrailers.ie for our full range. Byrne Trailers, the trailer people.
Hello, it's Joe Duffy here. I've been fortunate through my work with the National Lottery to meet some extraordinary good causes, from boxing clubs, wildlife conservation to community cafes. Did you know National Lottery players raise over 4.5 million euro every week for good causes all over Ireland? And that's all thanks to you, the players. You made this possible. Support responsibly. Average figures based on 2024 financials.
The car that started it all, the Volkswagen Beetle. Built in Bald's Bridge back in 1950, since then, we've come a long way. From first days at school, first loves and first jobs. We've been there rain or shine and the odd bit of sun. 75 years on, we're still proud to call Ireland home. Your Volkswagen. Love every mile. Celebrating 75 years in Ireland. Volkswagen.
Wexford Volkswagen. Local people, iconic cars.
Hey, local business owners, need help taking payments? Well, there's a whole world of transactions powered by Elavon, proud sponsors of the world-famous Wexford Opera Festival. So whether it's helping side hustlers hit the high notes or big businesses keep in perfect harmony, Elavon sets the stage for all businesses to perform. To find out more, visit elavon.ie. Elavon, your world of payments. US Bank Europe DAC, trading as Elavon Merchant Services, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
My daughter is only 16, but she's so organised. She's already planning gifts from the Macaulay website, hair care for her aunt, and a fab fragrance for her granny. Buying one present a week from now till Christmas, which makes budgeting less stressful. I can buy in-store or online from Macaulay.ie for home delivery or free click and collect. So easy. Available in-store and online at Macaulay.ie. Gifts they'll cherish at prices you'll love.
Live electricity wires are always near, and coming close to them can be dangerous. So always ask yourself, are you sure it's safe? Look out for electricity wires above and below you. If in doubt, call us on 1800 372 999. It might just save your life. ESB Networks. Stay safe and stay clear of electricity wires.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix. Southeast
Radio. A rare musical treat for you in the second hour of the show. We'll be talking to the legendary Steve Earle, who wrote songs like Galway Girl and Copperhead Road. What a life that man has led. But right now, let's link in with Neil Hughes. Good morning to you, Neil.
Yeah, good morning, Al. How are we doing?
I'm grand, Neil. First of all, I've asked you to kind of look at it was on the RTÉ website this morning, the comparisons of the cost of living. One of our regular listeners, Anne, has now told me that other supermarkets have also cut the price of milk. But Councillor Gercarty mentioned, cost of living is the big issue he's hearing as a councillor at the moment. And the grocery prices are really causing problems for people. You've had a chance to look at the article. You've had a chance to look at the story. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, so look, this is a really, really serious issue. And just to break down a little bit what's happening with inflation currently. So if we look at the headline inflation rate, 2.7%. That had actually, as you know, a couple of years ago, spiked right up to 10%. This is like the national average of everything included in that basket, okay? But anyway, it went down below 2% recently, which is the sort of long-term target for inflation. That's what the government would aim for, and what most, say, the Western governments would aim for. It's now gone above 2.7%, but that doesn't tell the whole story, because I'll tell you for why. You look at some of the sort of key products that people would buy on a regular basis. Meat is up, on average, over 11%. Milk is up near 13.5% over the last 12 months. Coffee up 10.5%. So a lot of listeners today will not recognize anything like 2% or 2.7% as being this with a national average, because their average that they're living with is having to go into the supermarket and finding that these are all double-digit increases in the last 12 months. It's really striking. Typically, when something is 2% or less, you don't really notice it. It's normally covered by cost of living increases that people will have in their wages or in social welfare or whatever. Hmm. But there's no increases of 13.5% typically in terms of people's incomes. That's why it's hurting consumers so much. Yeah. So, much.
So looking at the milk wars then that have started, Neil, is that the start of it? And I must just ask the listeners, if they had a choice for any grocery product they'd like to see come down, what would it be? Maybe you might text us or WhatsApp us on 0873737956. But do you think it's the start of a price war, or is it just going to be
a lot of it is depending on bigger picture issues, such as the geopolitical situation. And thanks be to God, it does seem like we are seeing perhaps the beginning of the end in relation to the Middle East crisis. Let's see how that goes. But I mean, I think everybody's going to welcome a change in the news from that particular part of the world. But listen, I think it's a good question to ask. I think you'll find that everybody, pretty much every family, is purchasing milk in the supermarkets. So if we are seeing now a decrease, say 2 litres of milk going down to 2.45 to 2.35, that's certainly a very welcome change. But we need to keep in mind that that has jumped 30% in the last 12 months. Okay, so it's only a very small step in the right direction. But definitely, the point really is that inflation is different for every family. It depends on what you're focusing on, what you're buying. And so the rate which we read about, 2%, 2.7%, that's kind of meaningless, actually, if you find that you're spending the vast majority of your family's income in a particular supermarket every week, or if you're paying it, say, between rent and paying between, you know, the supermarket and not much else. And that is a lot. That is a large percentage of the population.
Yeah.
So for them, inflation is probably double digits. And that's why there's such a huge impact. And that's why, for example, we see a presidential candidate that has left leanings so far ahead in the polls. This just gives an example of what the sentiment is out there, and which the government has to be really, really aware of.
We had Deputy Lawler, I was speaking to him over the weekend, and one of the points he's got quite a lot of support on is his belief that the hospitality VAT cut should not have been shared with multinationals, and he was quite strong on that this morning in the piece I heard. And now it appears you're also looking into this, and you believe that ministers are now seeking a way to exclude fast food franchises.
Yeah, so this is, overall, we've welcomed the fact that hospitality businesses now have a little bit of hope to get through, say, the much more difficult months of January, February, etc. Just to give a kind of Wexford statistic on this, for example, the spend in restaurants dropped 19% in County Wexford from August through September. And the biggest decreases from August through September after the holiday season finished in the restaurant sector were in Kerry, Wexford, and Donegal, the holiday counties, you know, where people typically will go, and they avail of the outstanding hospitality we have in the county. But that drop just shows the really sharp challenge that restaurants and hospitality businesses have in County Wexford. And why it's so important, I think, that we have seen now, after a long campaign, I think it's fair to say, you and I have been talking about this now for a couple of years, it does seem like that there's no sunset being applied to this. This is a permanent cut for the hospitality sector, which means that the restaurants at County Wexford can start to plan around that now. And if they do, some will want to pass on reductions, by the way. Some will want to say, yeah, this is a chance to be more competitive, get more customers in. Some may feel the need they have to absorb it, and so they'll get a boost to their cash flow. One way or the other, it's going to give a little bit of hope for the restaurant sector. Now, it would have been better, obviously, if it had come in quicker. So it would have had a more of an immediate effect. And I think the government has blamed the fact that some of the larger multinationals are going to be benefiting from this. Let's keep in mind those larger businesses, they do employ thousands upon thousands of people, including in County Wexford. So it is going to strengthen them definitely. So there's two sides to this argument. Overall, what I understand is the government are struggling to find a practical way to exclude some of the larger businesses. So I suspect that in the end we will see no change to this, and it'll apply across the board to hospitality. I think there might be some EU anti-competitive reasons as well, likewise, that you can't discriminate against certain businesses. So overall, I welcome it, though, Alan. I think it is going to give a lifeline to certain businesses, which is really, really welcome in our holiday county that we have.
Thanks, Neil. Time is catching up, and so 60 seconds. So a 60-second summary from Neil Hughes on the budget. Were you happy with it?
Yeah, I think there was some opportunities missed, like what we just talked about there. I think there wasn't as targeted sort of an impact on SMEs. I think, listen, the government were always going to be targeting, say, bigger business, the housing crisis, trying to stimulate construction, trying to stimulate the building of more and more apartment units to try and deal with the challenge that's there. And that was going to have to be paid for. Unfortunately, you never get everything you want. You never get everything that you want in a budget. It's just the way of it. That's what I've learned the hard way over the years. And I think the SMEs, they're going to be worried about the minimum wage cut. So the hospitality VAT change is going to be largely eaten up for some businesses by the increase in minimum wage. So let's see how that challenge plays out.
Okay.
Minimum wage is going to be coming in quicker. So all in all, listen, I'd say I'm not massively enthused, but listen, it could have been worse. I think it could have been worse for SMEs.
Thanks, Neil. As always, good to link in with you on a Monday. We head to the news with Siobhan from the Wexford News Centre. After that, we look back on a bumper weekend on sport. Today, we're going to focus in on hurling and camogie. And first up, straight after the news, we'll be talking to Billy Byrne to review the big matches that took place over the weekend. 6 minutes past 11. By the way, there was a wonderful concert that took place in the conference centre last Friday, or Saturday, I should say. We spoke to Johnny Smith, the choreographer, on the day of the or the eve of the concert. Stefan, hats off to Johnny Smith. He did incredible work as the choreographer, and there was a whole host of Wexford people involved as well. So well done to all those from the Wexford Musical Societies who flew the flag for the county at ovations in the National Concert or Convention Centre. I'll get it right eventually. Convention Centre. Meanwhile, there was more drama in theatre in Chadwick's Wexford Park yesterday when the pairings for the Pettit Senior Hurling final was sorted. But before that, on the eve of that game, there was an incredible camogie match as well, where Owlert came through victorious by a point. I sat beside Keith Roster, the Wexford senior hurling manager, for the first game yesterday. We had a good chat about things, and he's looking forward to the start of the new season, and he was keeping an active eye on both matches yesterday. But he told me there was high drama in the camogie match. I'm joined by Billy Byrne. Good morning to you, Billy.
Morning, Alan. Morning to your listeners.
1 point win for Owlert in that one, Billy. And the rise of camogie is on the rise. Can I just give a special mention, a little bit of club loyalty, to the Fife Harriers, my own club, who won their very first minor plate over the weekend as well. Great jubilation there. So well done to the Harriers. You don't mind me mentioning that this morning, though, do you?
I truly don't. And, you know, this is the time of the year now that all the finals have been played. And, you know, it's good. Camogie's are really taken off in Wexford. Over was always there, very strong, but there's other new teams they're after coming into over the last few years, and it's made it that little bit more special now, and it's more competitive as well. But you know, Owlert coming out on top, it wouldn't be the first time that a close match like that was won by Owlert. And you know, they have some very good young players coming through and experienced players that really makes a difference on the day.
Well, well done to them, and commiserations to St. Martin's. But there must be some incredible rivalry between these clubs at this stage. And it's good to see Camogie back on the rise again, Billy, isn't it?
It is, and I think it helps GAA in all over, both at men's level, at senior, in intermediate. The same, you have the two codes going the way they are at the moment. But okay, it's a good year for them this year, and hopefully it'll grow and grow, make it even stronger.
I'm glad you came on air this morning, because I know you're a diehard Navena man, and you came out of the traps, you flew out of the traps, and I have to say, just as a neutral, just watching both games, I enjoyed them thoroughly, and to be able to go to live hurling matches in Chadwick's Wexford Park, and again, I talk about the pitch, that pitch is magnificent, and the developments they've done there, but that game, the speed of both matches at the start yesterday, Billy, was brilliant.
It was, and you know, as you're saying, compliments to about the ground staff, but also there was a good big crowd at yesterday as well, you know, because crowds hadn't been great up to that, but there was a good crowd there yesterday. Right in your draw, big crowd, Gorey Doo, you know, the Martins and Fern, so there was a nice crowd there, and two very competitive matches, we'd say, up to maybe, especially the first one, and as you were saying, Navena come out of the blocks, scored early, got on the roll, but once Right in your sat down, got into their stride, got into the confidence type of hurling that they've been played, they showed probably that little bit more cohesion, and that they all knew the role and how to play it. You know, they didn't overplay the ball. It was one, two passes into the forwards. And in fairness, I would say there are two midfielders on the day, both Luke Codd and Eamon Wicken, done a lot of hurling around the middle of the field. They were the real engine at the Ratnure team yesterday. But, you know, from Brian Quigley, Charlie Mooney, and moving back AJ Redmond is the thing that they always do. But they looked in control, you'd have to say. Maybe after the first 10 or 15 minutes, Gorey were strong. But after that, you'd have to say that Ratnure looked in control. They knew exactly what they were doing. We had a lot of wides. I think we had 15 wides. Ratnure had 11. But still, I'd say the better hurling was definitely done by Ratnure, and they deserved the victory in the end.
Right. AJ Redmond, was he taking those long-distance frees, which were crucial in that match, weren't they?
Yeah, frees are crucial. You'd have to say, again, Ratnure's discipline. I think they held us to maybe six or seven frees. You know, Gorey, I think they were maybe 11 or 12. Yeah. And if you give them to the likes of AJ Redmond and Jack Redmond, most teams, they have people that will punish it. And they did punish Gorey on numerous occasions yesterday. When Gorey had possession of the ball, it was either turned over or they gave a foul. And that's due to the pressure that the Ratnure backs midfield and especially the forwards. You know, see Rory Higgins chasing back 50 yards yesterday, the same with Sean O'Connor. You know, all these guys, they were really, really hungry. They made Gorey make mistakes, and what they made the mistake, in fairness to AJ, he pinned two or three there in the second half that really put Gorey under pressure.
Well, it was good to see Conor Mackey. He looks trim, he looks fit, he looks well. And there were some other... your number seven yesterday impressed me, your halfback. Who's he? Just remind me, Billy, please.
Kyle Stokes is 6'3" or 6'4", you know, a good hurler, only 24 years of age. He has a lot of hurling ahead of him. He would have had injuries back maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but he's come very strong in that position, you know, especially in the second half. Right. I thought he hurled very well. We were getting a lot of possession, but we didn't use the ball that well. To be honest with you, and that was due to basically the hard work of Ratnure. They just didn't give us time on the ball, and that have brought a hunger with him as they came along this year. And I'm just saying it there yesterday, they're in the Junior B final, they're in the Junior A final, and they're in the Senior final. Right. And that's due mainly to the people up around Ratnure and the effort that they've put in, that they brought them back to the days that they're used to, going back maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, before we move on to the second match, a word for Skippy Ruth. I mean, what Ratnure have done is quite remarkable. They've come through intermediate, won that, almost won an All-Ireland final, won a Leinster final, and now they're in the Senior final. That is phenomenal work by Skippy Root and his team, isn't it?
It's great work, and again, you know, they knew they had to put the shoulder to the wheel last year after going down, because sometimes if you don't come straight back up, you know, it gets put straight away. They got into it, rolled up their sleeves, and they really brought the black and amber back very, very strong. And, you know, we'll stand a good chance in the county final. But as I say, they're in more than one county final. They won a juvenile county final on Saturday as well. And that's what we've been used to in my age group, coming up with the Ratnures. That's what they're able to do. So I'd say they're very, very happy in themselves where they are as regards GAA and hurling in Wexford at the moment.
On to the second match, and I've got a lot to get through in the show, Billy, so I then just want to get a view on the intermediate final, which is going to be a cracker as well. But on to the second match, and I stake my prediction on it again. If Barry O'Connor, for me, doesn't get Hurler of the Year in County Wexford this year, I'd hang my hat on it, because he was just brilliant yesterday. Everyone was talking about him. The goal he set up for the Martins, his overall performance, would he be up there for you in the top three?
I certainly would, and even last year, I mean, and we said it about him last year, he got vital goals at vital times of the year last year for to get St. Martin's over the line as regards winning it. But he does, they are a big, strong team. You know, you have Barry, you have Jack, you have Rory, Darren Codd. These are all 6'3", 6'4" men.
Yeah, but you've Joe Barrett as well. You've the Barrett, the O'Learys. I mean, they were all on fire yesterday. And to be fair to Ferns, again, Ferns came out of the trap and they stuck with them for about 40 minutes. But there's something in this Martin's team. The last 20 minutes, they just seem to put on the afterburners, don't they?
They do, and again, you know, they know exactly what position they're playing in. You will say that they're very, very strong and disciplined in the tackles. They do turn over a lot of ball in the tackles, and that's gone a part of the game now in hurling, that we see a hell of a lot. It's all about these turnovers, and they're probably the best team out there to get turnovers, especially with the opposition's back coming out of the backs. Okay. So I think it was a matter, like Paul Morris going off was a big, big loss to Ferns, you know, because he is their talisman, he's their captain, he does pull the strings, but that was a big loss to him.
He was devastated. I was on that side of the pitch yesterday, and I could see, I know Paul, and we'll have a lot of admiration for him. He was heartbroken. Yeah.
He was, and he knew himself, like, you know, because everything had to go right for Ferns to get a result against the Martins. Everything was going to have to go right. And, you know, early on it seemed to be, they were hanging in there, but once Paul went off, that was the things that he didn't need, and things started to unwind then as regards the negative part of what was going to happen to Ferns if things didn't go right for him.
Okay.
And they didn't, and you're only waiting for this Martins team, and they didn't really put him away. But they were still always the dominant team there yesterday, and they were always going to come out winners after, say, the first 15 minutes.
Well, we look forward to talking to you in the build-up to the finals. But just a word, the intermediate final is going to be a cracker as well. It's Clebon versus Feathered, isn't it?
It is, and I think they would have played maybe 4 or 5 years ago in the county final, intermediate final. I think Feathered might have won it that, and Clebon won it the following year again. It'd be two very close games, I have to say, but I think the senior would be a close game. I still fancy the Martins probably this year. I think they are that little bit ahead of everyone, but the way Ratnure are playing, you wouldn't write them off. But in the intermediate level, this could be a very, very close game. again, Federer won't fear playing Clebon. Clebon probably one of the favourites to come through for the win, but Federer won't be too far off it either. And both games, I'm looking forward to both games. It's nice to see the weather that we had yesterday. Hopefully it'll stay for another few weeks until we get these finals and play and sit down and look at them and get the crowds back looking at the matches.
Thanks, Billy. As always, our thanks to Billy Byrne, and well done to Liam Spratt and Noel Houlihan over the weekend, and all the people who joined them as well. I think Tom Dempsey was there, Stella Sennett was there as well, and of course, Gerry Ford. So we really appreciate the work put in by Southeast Radio's team over the weekend. Craig Ennis joins me in the studio now. Foxy Fryer is the brainchild of Craig, a creative marketing and events agency helping businesses boost their online presence. And it's lovely to once again highlight Wexford initiatives. But you name it after somebody I knew very, very well, because he was one of the bouncers beside me in the On Yoke Inn, Mick Ennis. He was your granddad, wasn't
he? Yeah, I've actually named it after both my grandfathers. So there was Paddy Foxy Whitty,
yeah,
from Kennedy Park here in Wexford.
Yeah.
And then Michael Fryer Ennis.
Foxy was your granddad?
Foxy's my grandfather too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Foxy Fryer came from both my grandfathers.
So, with both your granddads in mind, and they were characters, the two of them, right? Are they both got?
They've both passed.
Yeah.
They have.
So, what's the idea behind the business then, Craig?
So, I worked in the event and marketing industry since 2012. And when COVID came around, got a bit of a fright. I had my first child on the way. So, I jumped out into more solid work over the COVID period. But yeah, I'm delighted to get back into it now. I'm here to help businesses get established and get a foothold with their online presence and to get more clients. And outside of businesses, I'm also looking for brands like musicians and creatives.
Yeah. So you've kind of made your goal to make digital marketing more accessible.
Digital marketing. I do work in marketing in general, but digital marketing is my main goal with it.
And what are the main and the biggest mistakes or challenges you see small businesses facing online?
They try to sell too much. It sounds counterintuitive there. But if, especially online, your social medias, everything can't be a sales post.
Yeah.
You build a community.
Right. And your short lessons and templates on social media are really popular. And what kind of response have you had from local businesses using them?
It's great. I actually only launched this month as a soft launch. I hadn't approached any business or anything. The plan was for next month to go at that. I start putting up small lessons. There's hundreds of them in the pipeline. I have a 56-page a digital marketing 101 document going up for free download through my social media as well, for it to help businesses learn. But once I start posting the lessons, immediately I've had businesses of all sizes reaching out for me to handle their digital marketing.
I don't know about Foxy, but your granddad Mick, he loved his cars, didn't he?
No, he did.
Yeah.
And his motorbikes.
And he had the handlebar moustache, remember?
He did.
I used to say himself and Tommy Byrne from the Wolf Tones had the same moustache. I don't know who had the moustache first. He was a great friend to me. Both of them, I knew your Foxy, I knew him to say hello to, but your granddad Mick was a great friend to me. And I'd say he's looking down, both of them are looking down on you at the moment saying, fair play to you, Craig. You've got huge ambitions for this, haven't you?
I do. Like, when we say digital marketing, a lot of people think social media, but I covered a whole host of digital marketing. Everything from your brand voice, your social media management, content creation, websites, landing pages, and everything in between. I also do lessons for businesses.
Yeah, you have a thing called Scroll Stoppers. What's that?
So the event side of my business will be launching in early 2026. Scroll Stoppers is a concept that rolls my marketing and my events history into one. Mm-hmm. So Scroll Stoppers is focusing on acts that stop you scrolling on social media. So this is from music to comedy and DJs.
Yeah.
And I'll host events with some of the best talents from social media that just are not in the charts yet.
Yeah.
But I'm also building a community around it.
Yeah.
So I'm wanting to bring on music lessons, singing lessons. I'm wanting to get in with radio stations. So the local community, we'll build up local artists, get them radio play, get them bookings internationally and put them on my shows.
Yeah.
And I'm also building an ecosystem online for promoting these acts and the acts I bring in to do the shows.
Fascinating story. You were dreading coming in to have a chat with me, but now it's over now, so you can relax.
Yeah,
how can people find your website?
So my website, foxyfryer.com, will be launching shortly, but you can reach me at craig@foxyfryer.com. or you can find my marketing social medias. It's Foxy Fryer Marketing across all social medias.
Well, thank you for joining me in studio. And now we've got a rare treat. Speaking of social media, I had a chance to talk to Steve Earle, who wrote the song Galway Girl. What a life this guy has led. And we got a chance to speak. He was in New York, so with the time frame, we hadn't got a lot of time to talk, but we did manage to get a bit of a natter in. And first of all, I asked him about his link with the West of Ireland, because, of course, Galway Girl very much originated when he spent some time over there. And here's what Steve had to say.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix. Southeast
Radio. Well, the music that I played, you know, a lot of it had to do with bluegrass. When I got to Nashville, you know, I'd never been exposed to that much bluegrass live in Texas. It was a pretty rich musical environment otherwise. But by the time I got to Nashville in the mid-70s, John Hartford was there, the station in and opened. And a lot of that music, the old-time music and the bluegrass music in the States, obviously, you know, has its roots in Ireland and Scotland. So, you know, that started to seep into the songs that I wrote. And you could hear it in Guitar Town and some of the other albums, and certainly Copperhead Road. And it was just, I met the Pogues is really how I got connected to it directly. And, you know, recorded with them some. We got to be friends. And Terry Wood was like, because he was the Irishman in the band, you know, and he had connections to it that were a little deeper, that went back years and years and years, just in trad music in Ireland in general. And I learned a lot. I was more fascinated with it. Also, I was a big Waterboys fan, and I came to England to produce a record on a band called The Bible, which was Boo Hoerdeen's band, and Neil McCall was the guitar player. And the, you know, the guys at Chrysalis had me come into the office to listen to something they'd gotten from Mike Scott, and he'd been out in Galway. And they said, we reckon he thinks he's making a country record, and wanted to see what you thought you made of it. And they were freaking out. It was Fisherman's Blues. Yeah. And I said, you just need to put this out. It'll be okay. But, you know, it's one of those things. Mike Scott and I have gotten to be friends. I got to kind of be a water boy for a second on this last record of his. I sang one of the songs on the record. I was supposed to just write a new melody for it, and I ended up, you know, actually singing the song on the record. And this Dennis Hopper thing song cycle he did. So yeah. I was the relationship with Mike, because Fisherman's Blues was made out there, and I met Sharon when Mike was touring, you know, Fisherman's Blues.
Did you meet, Steve, Todd Moss, Jimmy McCullum, the Shannon singer, because he was very much a good friend of Mike. And I, as a young broadcaster, I went over there and met Mike Scott and all those. I met Tomás, Jimmy McCullum. And Mike became heavily influenced by the old Shannon singing. And then, of course, you linked him with Shannon on the Button Box. Yeah.
Yep, that was the deal. And that was like the connection to Sharon was Mike. And then it ended up being... Sharon came to Nashville and played the station in, and we sort of made plans to get together when I came back. And I decided I wanted to go to Galway in the winter times. And what I figured out in those days in the 90s, mid to late 90s, there was all of the Irish music was exploding all over the world. And in the wintertime, though, the people that were on the different, you know, river dance tours and touring with bands, a lot of them lived out west, and they would come into Galway, and the music in the pubs would fly. Yeah. And once I figured that out, I started come in, you know, like just like Christmas or just after, and staying until St. Paddy's Day or so. And yeah. I did that for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And the Galway Girl got written during that period, and some other stuff. And I recorded the Galway Girl and Steve's Last Ramble that were on Transcendental Blues over in Dublin and in the factory, just with Sharon's band, with the Woodchoppers, her band at the time.
You've had some life, an incredible life, really. But one of the songs I heard first wasn't Galway Girl, obviously. It was Copperhead Road. Where does that song come from? What's the background to it?
Of which song?
Copperhead Road.
Oh, it's just... part of it musically is just that connection, you know, to music from those islands over there. But then there's also the fact that the people, descendants of those people, settled in the Appalachian region, and you know, there's been songs about. It's not the first song about moonshine, But I was, it was a lot of things came together. We started talking about Vietnam finally in the 80s. And so you got Born in the USA and you got the movie Platoon, and it took the, we were pretty traumatized by that war, all of us, and because we grew up with it. And
were you there? Generation. Were you there, Steve? No.
I missed it by a year because I certainly wasn't a candidate for a student deferment because I dropped out when I was 16. But the first it was draft by lottery, and my lottery was the first one that didn't happen when they started winding the draft down and pulled out of Vietnam. And because I turned 18 in 73, you know, so that was there was no lottery that year. So I basically but it was still, I knew people that went, and it was a big, I lived in a military town. It was a big part of the culture. And I eventually just started, that got put together. And the idea of these guys coming back from what a woman got arrested in Elizabethton, North Carolina. She was in her 70s, and seems like she was an old woman now, but I'm 70 now. So, but she's like, it seemed weird. She was growing marijuana up in a holler, and that stuck in my head for a couple of years, actually. Mm. And then I came up with this story about a family that had been moonshiners, and they, when their sons came back from Vietnam with a big bag of seeds, that they started growing marijuana instead, and it just it was an Appalachian thing. So the music got sort of that way too, and that was, you know, that's the Pogues paid attention to me from the beginning. But that when that album came out, everybody in the band was at Town and Country in London when we played, which is that's called La Bats Forum or something now, but it's called Town and Country in those days in Kitherstown.
Your time in Nashville, a huge country music fan you're speaking to as we speak at the moment, but and the roles and the jobs you did in Nashville, what was that like for you? It goes back to the 70s, doesn't it? 70s Nashville, it says, a lot different to what it is now.
It was. I got lucky, and I worked very few day jobs in the very beginning because I had a couple of jobs in restaurants, and then I got signed to a publishing deal, and my wife had a job, so we got away. I was married then, and the first time, and it was I got lucky. I got there in time for sort of a salon. It was, you know, Guy and Susanna Clark and Rodney Crowell was still there when I got there. John Hyatt was there on his first tour of duty, and it was there was a lot of us that were a little different, a little further to the left, and we were post Bob Dylan. We were post Christopherson songwriters in Nashville, and he was the first post Bob Dylan songwriter.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty great time to be there.
Yeah, but Towns Van Zandt was your man. You ran away to sing.
Yeah, I mean, I followed him around Texas, and then but Towns didn't live anywhere. He didn't at that point. He lived in Nashville later after I was touring all the time. But he moved to Nashville finally permanently in 77. But before that, he would always, when Nashville, he was staying at Guy and Susanna's house.
Yeah.
And his orbit was Nashville, Crested Butte, Colorado, Houston, and sometimes Austin. And then
he was the man.
Yeah. In a circle going around and around. He'd go to New York every once in a while, but mostly it was that orbit.
You've never been shy. You've always been outspoken. You've looked at areas like social justice and anti-war. And where do you stand on the death penalty, pro or anti?
It doesn't work. It doesn't do anything it's intended to do. It's expensive. And, you know, cycles of violence are cycles of violence. I think, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like Ireland should know that better than any place does. And I it just doesn't... you know, it's never it just taking a life does it. For one thing, if we have a democracy, which we're hanging on by the skin of our teeth where that's concerned in my country right now, in a democracy, if the government kills someone, then I'm killing someone, and I object to the damage that does to my spirit. That's what the core.
Yeah. How do you feel about the current? How do you feel about the current state of your country as we speak? Are people you're not being muzzled? Are you allowed to speak? Do you speak?
I do speak, but you know, I'm not that big of a deal, you know, so I don't think they're worried about me. But it's one of those things. I'm more careful about it. I'm more careful about playing Jerusalem right now. But I do play it. I'm not going to stop playing it. And because I had, you know, I did go to Ireland the first time when there were gun trucks in the street in Belfast, and everybody said that would never end. And the reason it ended had, you know, when it came right down to it, it had, you know, nothing to do with Jerry Adams or Tony Blair. It had to do with young men being able to get jobs. It's way harder to talk them into killing each other if they feel like they got some kind of future. And I think that's true anywhere.
I've always loved your ability to just call it as you see it. But I want to get back to the main reason you and I are speaking. You're coming to Wexford, where I'm speaking to you from, on the beautiful Keyfront here, to the Spiegel tent on the 23rd. You're not coming alone. You're coming with Sharon Shannon. You're coming with Liam O'Mainley. You're coming with Mundy. So everyone's going to ask, who's going to sing Galway Girl? Are you going to sing it?
Well, that's the funny thing. I'm sure Mundy and I are going to have to reach an accommodation. Yeah. You know, every other Irish musician and is cussing me because I ever wrote the damn thing, because I got to play it every night. But I'm sure Mundy and I'll work something. I've always been very aware that the reason that song's going to be remembered at long after I'm gone has more to do with Mundy's, you know, weeks on the at number one on the Irish charts than it was either my version or Sharon's version. Sharon's version is my version with the accordion turned up louder, and it's just one of those things. You know, we've all had some success with it, but Mundy hit it over the fence, and that's all there is to that.
It's an absolute pleasure. I know you've done a lot of these interviews today, so I'm not going to delay you much more, but I know you're a strong advocate for equality. You're also a great believer in the power of addiction recovery. Have you gone through all these things, Steve?
I think you kind of have to be. In 12-step programs, there's one of the foundations of it is service work within the program and outside of the program. And that's when I got to be a lot. A lot of the work I did against the death penalty, that was just something that kind of picked me. It just helps to fill in the gaps. And there's big gaps in you if you've been addicted to drugs for a long time.
Steve, pleasure to talk to you. Where you're gigging when you come to Wexford on the Spiegel tent is directly opposite where this radio station is. And there's a warm welcome if you want to pop in and say hello.
Just holler. We'll be over there.
Bye bye.
And if he does and we get a chance to speak to him again, no doubt we'll talk to him about his life and times. He was actually married 7 times to 6 different women. He has a son, John Henry, who I think is 15 or 16. And that song was from the marriage to Alison Moore. And you might say, who was Alison Moore? She recorded the song A Soft Place to Fall. And where did that feature? It featured in that wonderful Robert Redford movie, The Horse Whisperer. What a life that he has led. And if you get a chance to go to the Spiegel tent on the 23rd, there may be a few tickets left. By all means, avail of the opportunity to see this true legend. I'd like to thank 2 people for making that interview possible. Sheena Madden, who coordinated the interview for me, and our group operations manager, Rebecca Donnelly, who made it technically possible for us to do it, because with time zones, etc., it wasn't easy, but it was worth it, particularly when I get a chance to play this.
Well, my name's Donnelly Pettimore. Same as my daddy and his daddy before. You hardly ever saw granddaddy down here. They only come a town about twice a year. They buy 100 pounds of yeast, dance a copper line. Everybody knew it made me shine. Now the revenue man wanted granddaddy bad. He'd left a holler of everything he had. For my time, but I've been told he never come back from Copperhead Road. At the Mason's Lodge, shots of candy share fainting on the side. Just shot a coat of primer, then he looked inside. Well, him and my uncle tore that engine down. I still remember that rumbling sound. Sheriff came around in the middle of the night. Heard mama crying that something wouldn't right. He's headed down to Knoxville with a weekly load. You can smell a whiskey burning down Copperhead Road.
this first round here in a way. I've done 2 tours of duty in Vietnam. I came home with a brand new plane. I'm taking a seat from Colombia, Mexico. I just planted up a hotter down Copperhead Road. From Copperhead Road. Copperhead Road. Copperhead Road. Copperhead Road.
Wow. Steve Earle, Copperhead Road, and well done to Brian Byrne and the team at Lantern for bringing the quality of that man to the Spiegel Tent for the festival.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix, brought to you with thanks to Joyce's Expert Wexford. Nespresso coffee machines consistently deliver the perfect cup of coffee. Browse all Nespresso machines in-store or online at joyces.ie.
Hi, Colin Murphy here from Kehoe & Associates. We are County Wexford's number one property advisors. Our team includes 5 fully qualified auctioneers. The property market is excellent right now and we are achieving record prices. If you are considering selling your property, contact Kehoe & Associates today on 053 91 44393. We'll only be delighted to help you out. Remember, Kehoe is the key.
Discover Centra Simple Savers, your go-to for great everyday value. Like Centra Fresh Irish Whole Chicken, 1.8 kilo, €6. Selected Coke, Sprite, Fanta 4-can packs, €3.25 each plus deposit. And Kronenbourg 1664 12-bottle pack, €15.62. Enjoy great prices on all your favourites. Centra. Live every day. Enjoy alcohol sensibly.
Looking for a Nugent trailer? Call Byrne Trailers Bunclody. Your one-stop shop for sales, service and parts. We guarantee 12-month warranty on all new trailers sold. Phone 053 937 5580 or log on to burntrailers.ie for our full range. Burn Trailers, the trailer people.
The body is that of a 35-year-old. Significant lesions to the face, particularly the right temple, correlating to the intracranial hemorrhaging observed. Seatbelt abrasions clear across chest and abdomen. Broken femur and tibia, right leg. Blood alcohol is over the legal limit. Cause of death, drink driving.
Drink and drive, and it could be you on the mortuary slab. A message from the Road Safety Authority. Visit rsa.ie.
In the heart of Wexford, the Talbot Hotel is where style meets relaxation. From romantic dinners and family gatherings to a well-earned night away, the Talbot has it all. Savour afternoon tea in our elegant gallery, enjoy the bistro menu in the Oyster Lane restaurant, or relax in the Ballast Bar with great food, drinks and live entertainment. Overlooking the River Slaney, experience comfort, warm hospitality, exceptional service and unforgettable moments at the Talbot Hotel Wexford.
It's the Right Price Tiles Wood Flooring and Bathware biggest ever sale. Up to 50% off everything in store. All tiles, all wood flooring, all outdoor slabs, cladding and bathware. Everything is slashed in price. This sale is not to be missed. Right Price Tiles Wood Flooring and Bathware, biggest ever half price sale, extended until Sunday.
Hi, I'm Alan Corcoran. Join me every Friday from 11 a.m. on Southeast Radio's Morning Mix for the Friday panel. Each week I'll be joined by a panel of guests from all walks of life as we discuss a wide range of topical issues, stories and ideas that matter to you. The Friday panel, brought to you with thanks to the Hatch Lab Goree, where ideas hatch and businesses soar. Find out more at hatchlab.ie. Don't miss it. Fridays from 11 on Southeast Radio.
Have you decided to sell your home? Talk to Kehoe & Associates. Call today to speak to one of our 5 fully qualified auctioneers. Remember, Kehoe is the key.
Chat, news and your views. Southeast Radio's Morning Mix.
Well, we're not too far away from the festive time of the year. We're coming into the festival time of the year. To round off today's show, we'll be announcing the Volunteer of the Year for Wexford Festival Opera. But right now I'm joined by Emma Byrne, award-winning illustrator and author of Famous Irish Mariners. And I was humming a little bit of the Wolf Tone song, Amber William Brown, to you there. And I was asking you, is he in this illustration? And he is, isn't he?
William Brown is indeed in the book. He was the father of the Argentine Navy, and he was born in Foxford in County Mayo. And we recently launched the book there in the National Maritime Museum in Dunleary. And I was delighted that the Argentine ambassador, Anne Maria Cachaza, she came along to the launch. And it was lovely to have a replica of his sword in the museum there.
So I jumped straight into him, but I should have asked you first, what inspired you to write a book about mariners?
So I'm from Ross originally. I'm
New Ross,
yes. Okay. I'm a yellow belly, and I went to school there, and I was always, I was in the Sea Scouts, and I remember coming to Wexford as a child and looking at the Commodore Barry statue. Now, I didn't pay too much attention to the writing underneath it or the inscription on it, but what I saw was this man in a dashing cape and a tricorn or a pirate hat and a sword looking out to sea. And underneath it, it said, "This is the founder of the American Navy." And that kind of, I parted in my head. And, you know, as a child, you were brought to the hook. I was in the Sea Scouts. And much later then, I came back and looked at it again. And I thought, well, hang on a second. That's kind of a big deal, isn't it? What does that mean? And that was the start of it then.
Okay. You cover both famous and lesser-known mariners. And, of course, we are a seafaring county. What was the most surprising while researching?
I suppose John Barry's story himself was very surprising. It's hard to pick one. But the fact that he was a man just from Tecumseh, and that the family were evicted when he was 9 years, or when he was very young, and at 9 years of age he went to sea, that kind of struck a chord with me. Imagine now a child going off to sea, and or the parents saying, you know, when a child goes to sea, and just the extraordinary life that
what
he had.
What age was he?
He was nine as a cabin boy.
Wow. Yeah.
And then when he started working the trade on ships between Britain and America, and it was later then, he was 15 when he moved to Pennsylvania, and then he got tied up in the Continental Wars there, and was a great pal of John Hancock, and then John Washington gave him commendations, and eventually became...
Well, that's one. Now, yeah. I said I was humming the Wolf Tone song of Admiral William Brown, but Grania Whale is something as well. Sean Davey wrote a beautiful musical suite about Grania Whale, and she features too.
Grania Whale features, and Bonnie features, but I'd like to talk for a second about another woman that I didn't really know much about. Because it was, I suppose, as a woman myself, it was nice to get a few women into it, but Kate Tyrrell. Yes. Was an extraordinary mariner, and she was from Arklow, and the name Tyrrell and ships and Arklow are synonymous together. And when I was researching this book, and there was a lot of research into it, I went up to the Arklow Heritage Museum, and there in the corner they had a big sort of an area for Kate Tyrrell, and she was a woman in the 19th century who had her own ship called the Denbighshire Lass, and basically through sheer necessity all the menfolk in her family died. She took over the running of the business, and her sisters had died of consumption. Very hard times, but at a time when women, you know, were largely at home and raising a family, she grabbed the bull by the horns and took the business onto herself and made a huge success of it, and carried the Fenian flag.
Yeah. So as an illustrator, how do you approach bringing these historical figures and their adventures to life?
Well, I put it together in the book, and I suppose I'm fond of book illustration and the production of a book. And that's what I drew a lot of the maps in this. Now, it was tricky enough finding the map details. My husband, Peter O'Dwyer, helped me a great deal with that. But I like the look of the book. I think it was important. And researching the imagery for this book was a journey in itself, because there were a lot of historical images to find, and to go with the characters in the book, and that appealed to me as much as the writing of the book did.
Where can people get this book, and when can we get it?
It's available now in all good bookshops. So you'll get it in the book centre here, and it's also on the www.o'brien.ie website.
Yeah, and yours is a very interesting life yourself, Emma. So it's a short chat just to illustrate the book, but I've just to let you know, we're going to invite you back to one of our panel discussions, because I think you have a lot to offer. So Lucinda has you on her hit list now, so there you go. You'll be back sooner rather than later.
I'm delighted to hear that, Alan. Very honoured. Okay. I'd love to come back. Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining me in studio. Emma Byrne there. Wonderful, wonderful book. As you're looking for something coming up to the festive period, maybe this could be a stocking filler for you.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix, brought to you with thanks to Joyce's Expert Wexford. Belling Kitchen Starter Packs, now available at unbeatable value. Check them out in store or online at joyces.ie.
With over 1,000 TFI Local Link door-to-door services nationwide, if you're on our route, we're on our way. To use the service, simply pre-book the day before you want to travel with your TFI Local Link office. To find out more about door-to-door services in your area, visit transportforireland.ie. We're Transport for Ireland. We're Transport for you.
If you are a victim or survivor of sexual violence, you do not need to suffer on your own. Help is available to you. We spoke to Niamh from the communications team in Coon about supports available to all victims of sexual violence.
We want all victims and survivors of sexual violence to know that support is always here for them. You don't need to deal with this on your own, regardless of when it happened.
If you are looking for help and support in relation to sexual violence, contact your local sexual violence support centre on 1-800-33-0033.
Looking for an exceptional dining experience for all occasions? Look no further than the Ashtown Park Hotel Goree. Experience the Ashtown's renowned farm-to-fork ethos at the Steakhouse at Roan, open Thursday to Saturday from 6pm and for lunch each Sunday from 1pm to 3pm. Enjoy premium Angus beef, grass-fed and dry-aged to perfection, straight from Redmond Farm. Or sample the local favourite, Ivy Bar and Restaurant, home to our award-winning carvery and a delicious bar food menu. Dining at Ashtown Park Hotel, where flavour begins on the farm.
Starting a new chapter, choose DNG, one of Ireland's most trusted estate agents, to help you achieve the best price when selling your home. With over 80 offices nationwide and 1,200 international partners, DNG offers local expertise with vast global reach. And don't just take our word for it. DNG are proud to have the highest average rate of Google reviews of any national estate agency, from first valuation to final sale. We're with you every step. Your move, our people. Your local agents are DNG McCormick Quinn Wexford, DNG O'Connor and O'Connor Bunclody, and DNG Pierce Properties Gorey. Visit dng.ie.
Tugan vaccini niart bresha go de chorasim yinachta, chantul chosin serchinus trom hushach. Malterhuch vaccine flu oil, motatu shaska blin dish non is shina, mos ibri kurim slanchahu, motatu gumper clina, nomatu rock slancha fad sermahart. Molta which vaccine COVID ni jega oil freshen, mota tu shaska blin dish non is shina, nomata rot slancha fad sermahurt. Kur vaccine led a lista radiatola jana, agas cousin who hain agas the hylochs na mina mach roin. Laurel doctor no kogashore ran fortach, no tour courch or HSE punkai la hai chilla olish. Own HSE.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix. Southeast
Radio. Well, to round off today's edition of your Morning Mix, I'm joined by David Lane from Ecclesiastical Insurance, who sponsored the Wexford Festival Opera Volunteer of the Year Award. And also with us is this year's winner, someone who has dedicated decades to supporting the festival with energy, positivity and a true spirit of volunteerism. And he's mortified here as I read that out. But David, you're welcome first off, before I even talk to the other David, who is the winner. First of all, you put a lot of effort into this. How did you go about, and what stood out about this year's volunteer for you?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Alan, is to celebrate Davey. And Davey's been involved for a long time with the festival, and he's one of several hundred. I think there's over 350 volunteers involved in the Wexford Festival. So it's always a tough decision, and thankfully I don't have to make the decision every year as to who the volunteer of the year is. But it is certainly a tough decision for people to make. But for us, in terms of Ecclesiastical Insurance, as I said, we've been involved for over 10 years. It's very central to what we do.
Let's not keep the listeners in suspense anymore, or the other volunteers as well. I'll let you name him.
Very good. Davey, you tell us about yourself.
Davey Lynch. Well done. Retired Garda.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Starting with, I came to town, as you know, in 1973. I joined the Light Opera Festival, first of all, and then I got involved in the heavy opera, as you call it, heavy opera. It's true. Casey Whelan asked me to drive about 1989, 1990. It was Des Whelan, Lord Emerson, he was there, Dinny Forn. We just had two cars then. It was hard work then because it was hard to get to the airport then. I had to go through Glenda the Downs and, you know, the toll bridge, the East Link toll bridge.
And were you driving your own cars or sponsor cars?
Rovers sponsored the first cars we had.
Yeah, good cars.
They were good cars, yeah. But then as the years went on, as you know, the road got better. Yeah. Before to take you 3 or 4 hours to get to the airport. Now you go to the airport and...
And who's sponsoring the Mobys this year?
This year it is Range Rovers from Bowlands of Waterford. So we've stepped up the market.
And you have the motorway to go on. So, for example, this year, compared to previous years, who have you been collecting from the airport, the various times?
I collected... Well, I suppose the one that stuck me in mind, I collected Anita Dobson. Remember, she's in EastEnders. She had a cameo part, and I collect Brian May. She's married to him, isn't she?
Yeah, from Queen.
From Queen, yeah. And you'd be collecting politicians, and I collected a police officer.
And you'd be a shy sort of a fellow.
I collected a guy, he was an opera singer. Before he was an opera singer, he was a policeman in the docks in New York. He had brilliant stories coming down the car. And
yeah.
All sorts of people.
And leading the team of volunteer drivers must come then with challenges. What's been the most rewarding part of the role, do you think?
That's just what most rewarding, I suppose, to get people here on time and to get them here safely. And most of the lads, there's women and men, most of the people, they like the company and they spin them a few yarns. And
David, with ecclesiastical insurance, you would have a huge demand on your company to sponsor this, that and the other, but you're intensely loyal to Wexford Festival Opera, aren't you, as a company?
Yeah, well, Wexford is a very special, and the Wexford Festival is a very special event. For us, you know, we're a specialist insurer, we're part of the Benefact Group, so our mission is to be there for the greater good of society. So, you know, we insure heritage buildings, we do a lot in the art and culture space. I think for me, I think what really kind of brings it home to us is when you meet the volunteers, when you meet the likes of Davey, and I've been fortunate enough to meet a lot of the volunteers over the year. People talk about the Wexford experience in terms of coming to the opera, and that's what differentiates it besides the internationally acclaimed opera itself. But when you get somebody coming in, you know, O'Brien May or Anita Dobson coming in,
you need somebody.
And meeting the likes of Davey, you know, you're going to create a good impression straight away, and then they come down and they experience Wexford itself and so on. So there's a lot of good things around Wexford, and we're very happy to be involved with it.
And how do you see volunteers like Davey shaping the festival experience for performers? And you possibly answer the question, but I mean, you obviously take time and put a lot of effort into selecting a volunteer, because there are so many for this festival.
Yeah, I think there's over 350 volunteers involved in the festival, and the festival wouldn't operate. It couldn't function if the volunteers weren't here. And there's a real wide variety of things that the volunteers do, and they... You know, the festival starts this week and will go on for a few weeks. These guys have been working, you know, the 300 or so volunteers have been working for months on this. So it's fabulous to see it. But I think in terms of, you know, Davey and the volunteers here are representative of volunteers that are involved in all sorts of different things across Ireland and probably across different parts of the world too. But for us, in terms of what we do, we're very kind of community-driven. All of our profits go back into good causes. So while I run a specialist insurance company, and we're delighted to
Are you the actual MD?
I am the actual MD.
You're the man.
I am the man. That's, I'm not sure how, Alan, but yes, I've been the managing director for Ecclesiastical in Ireland for a few years now. But I think the thing for us is that, you know, I run a normal insurance company with the team of people in Dublin.
How many have you got working with you, David?
We have about 50 who are based in Dublin, and then globally, we're in the UK, Canada and Australia. We have about 2,500 employees across the globe. But the thing for us is that, you know, all of our profits go back into good causes, and to be able to support something like Wexford and to be able to support the volunteers, it means a lot to the community here. I think probably Wexford doesn't get as much it's not recognised as well kind of nationally as it is internationally. I think it's a real kind of jewel in the crown for Wexford. So we're delighted to be involved with it.
You must have wonderful memories down through the years, apart from driving and picking up the likes of Anita Dobson and Brian May, and you would have lost some great friends as well. So it must mean a heck of a lot to you to be recognised as Volunteer of the Year.
I suppose it is, Alan. Like, I'm doing it now for 38 years or whatever it is. Like, you don't do it to get this award. I mean, it's nice to get it, but I do have great memories.
And what keeps you motivated then? Is it because of those memories?
I've said a few years, unless I'm going to leave this, I say, oh, David, don't know, wait. But it's easy to do. It's easy now because mobile phones now, you know when planes are landing, you know when you can ring a fella, he'll ring you if he's late. Years ago, it was a bit different because, as you know, it was a lot longer to get to Dublin and you had to, if flights were delayed, you had to wait around, but it's just completely different now.
Years ago, you had the old theatre as well, the Theatre Royal.
You had
people like Jerome Hines there as well. And they leave a lasting legacy. But the new state-of-the-art theatre, the fact that the lights are constantly on, and then you have Rosetta Cookie as well. What an artistic director. Yeah. So, I mean, the qualities and the way it's evolved, Davey. And then the warmth of welcome that the volunteers give when you come, not just to the Opera Festival, but to any event.
Yeah. Most people, like I said to David, most people get out surprised that it's in a small, narrow street at the Opera House. They expect it to be people who are here for the first time, they expect it to
and
be.
Then they go behind the door and they see the theatre.
Yeah, exactly.
Did that catch you on the hop, David, when you saw the new state-of-the-art theatre, which still looks new, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Like, every time I go in there, I kind of go, wow. You know, it's a fabulous facility, and it is absolutely state-of-the-art compared to other opera venues around the world. So, yeah, but as Davey says, like, when it's hidden away, you could easily walk past it for the first time. So, but it's a great place.
Well, look, it's lovely to round off with this wonderful accolade being awarded to David Fitzgerald, but on a morning that you can really sense the build-up to Wexford Festival Opera, where we've just spoken to Steve Earle on this programme. He's one of the guests coming too, the Spiegel Tent. I mean, the festival is wide-ranging between the fringe and everything. So I leave you round off the show for me today, David, just to acknowledge Davey and the importance of the festival and why you, with Ecclesia, have decided to come along and support it.
Well, I think first of all today is about congratulating Davey on being recognised for the work that he's done over the last 38 years. It's a phenomenal period of time, and I think, as I said earlier on, he's representative of the 350 volunteers or 350 plus volunteers. So for us at Ecclesiastical, we're delighted to recognise Davey, to recognise all the people and the volunteers working in the festival, and we wish all the people involved with the very best of luck for the festival as it kicks off on Friday.
That's a nice way to round off today's programme, produced by Lucinda Kelly. Our thanks to Catherine Stafford on the telephones. The council meeting awaits yours truly for the afternoon now, and the results of what comes from that we'll hear in the programme tomorrow, plus lots more. I think there was a protest also outside the council offices today in relation to an ongoing issue in North Wexford. So a lot to get through tomorrow, but today we say well done to Davey Lynch, thanks to David Lane, and enjoy the rest of what hopefully is a good Monday for you.